together. I think it's a nice flow in terms of telling a story, in terms of our response to gonorrhea and decreasing susceptibility. So I'm honored to be a part of this group. And let's move on from the title of my talk to what I think would have been a better title or a more specific question, which is, will recommending injectable-only gonorrhea therapy delay treatment by providers who usually prescribe oral antibiotics? So I think this has been a question many of us have had. And so just a little bit of background. I think most of you have gotten it, but I want it's a slightly different context for this analysis. You know, treatment for gonorrhea has really shifted over time as we've kind of been chasing the bug and its changing susceptibilities. And so in 2007, the CDC updated their 2006 treatment guidelines and removed fluoroquinolones as a recommended therapy. So what we were left with as of April 2007 was equivalent presentation, ceftriaxone 125, an injectable one-time dose, or Cefixime, a one-time oral dose. And there was no dual treatment recommendation. Basically, unless they had chlamydia or you didn't use a sensitive test, they didn't need a second treatment. And then, as you now know, December 2010, the new treatment guidelines came out, and the new recommendations for GC treatment changed. Not only was ceftriaxone dose increased from 125 to 250, but the or if not an option was put there, and Cefixime was really supposed to be your recommended therapy of last resort. So a little confusing, but basically we were trying to get everyone to use ceftriaxone, but if you couldn't, because perhaps you didn't have injectable treatment, you could use Cefixime. And dual therapy was recommended, so either azithromycin or doxycycline, and that was for dual therapy for gonorrhea, regardless of their chlamydia results. So in LA, we did something slightly different. So what we did was we made a one-pager and we distilled the CDC recommendations down, but we only recommended ceftriaxone 250, and we moved Cefixime to an alternative. And so all of our kind of language was around, it's really important you treat with ceftriaxone, but if not an option. So the same message, but a slight difference. And then what we did in Los Angeles was, you know, we put it on our website. Who knows how often people actually check that. We sent out a letter, but we also have pretty aggressive public health investigators who were told that if they had a GC case that wasn't treated with ceftriaxone, that they should follow up and at least, you know, tell them what the new treatment guidelines were. So the objectives of this analysis really was to determine whether or not new IM treatment recommendations delayed or prevented treatment in facilities that treated gonorrhea predominantly with oral antibiotics, and to figure out whether or not they transitioned over to the new treatment regimens. So, our methods. So we took our STD case registry, which is called CaseWatch, and we call this a quasi-experimental design because we made a study population, and then we looked at their prescribing pre and post the CDC recommendations. And so to create the study population of low injecting facilities, we took all records of all urogenital and or rectal GC that was diagnosed in LA County in 2010. And then from those, we selected facilities that treated less than 10% of their GC cases with any dose of ceftriaxone. And we called those low injectors. Basically, they're predominantly oral treaters. And then we compared gonorrhea treatment amongst all GC cases that were diagnosed in these facilities before the recommendations and after the recommendations. And I like that our after the recommendations are the same as Roxanne's. So it was April to September 2010 and April to September 2011, because we really wanted time for providers to actually know about the new changes. And then what we did was we assessed the proportion treated with the recommended cephalosporin, and we also looked at IM specifically, and proportion treated with dual therapy. And to look at time to treatment, we looked at the median time to treatment pre and post. And so I should first explain what we called recommended therapy. So for 2010, if they got any kind of ceftriaxone that was 125 or over, that was recommended therapy. For oral, it was Cefixime 400 And we also included cefpodoxime for this analysis, and that's because cefixime wasn't actually available until late 2008 or mid 2008. And then because it was expensive and providers didn't know about it, and frankly in LA we didn't really change our recommendations that they should shift over to cefixime until really end of December 2010, we decided that if they treated with cefpodoxime, we would call that recommended therapy. And then 2011, it was the CDC recommendation, ceftriaxone 250 or cefixime 400. And for this, all these analyses until the very end, I'm only talking about cephalosporins. The dual therapy, I'll show you at the end, but we just want to look at cephalosporin treatment. So our results. First, who was this study population? So there were 197 LA facilities that were low injectors. So they represented 14% of all facilities that were reporting GC cases in 2010. And this made up about 11% of all of our gonorrhea in LA in both of these time periods. So 11% of GC cases were diagnosed in these facilities, the study facilities. This slide is showing you the distribution of GC cases across the study facility. So remember, again, these are just the low injectors. And orange is 2010 and blue is 2011. As you can see, in 2010, almost 50% of our low injectors were private providers. It's private or other. Basically, 80% of all of these were private providers, with about 5% HMOs and even smaller for kind of schools and hospitals. And the next big group of the GC cases were family planning. And then we also had a bunch of low injecting facilities, which were juvenile hall. And then in 2011, there was a shift. And so family planning actually had the bulk of GC cases in this population, with a statistical difference amongst the private. So there was a drop in who was diagnosing GC across these study sites. So the first question was, amongst these study sites, did they start doing any change to their recommended treatment by facility? So first off, we looked at overall. So amongst the GC cases that they diagnosed, what percent gave recommended CDC therapy? And as you can see, there was no change. It was about 73% of all of these sites gave recommended CDC therapy before and after. And again, this does not include dual therapy. This is just the cephalosporins. And then looking across the three different types of provider types, you can see there was no difference in juvenile hall, family planning, no difference. And then we did see a drop in overall proportion of GC cases that were given recommended therapy amongst the private. So going from 63%, a 10% drop down to 53% were treated with recommended therapy in 2011. Then you really want to know, though, what about IM? Because that was our big question. So what proportion of recommended therapies got IM therapy by facility type? And so overall, you can see there was quite a big shift. So amongst those that got recommended therapy, 90% in the second time period were now treating with IM, we're now reporting treating with IM ceftriaxone. And looking across the board, we felt pretty good. And so there was, amongst the study population, a significant shift in reporting IM treatment. So juvenile hall, 85% of their GC cases that were treated with recommended therapy got IM, 97% in family planning, which we were very impressed with, and private practice went from 16% to 76%. Then you start wondering, well, did it take them a lot longer? Were they sending them out to the pharmacy, picking up their shots, bringing it back, and adding 2 weeks in, which is something else we really wanted to look at, and was something I think we were all concerned might be an issue. So overall, the median time to treatment of recommended therapy went from 5 days to 7 days. And looking across the board, there was, an addition of a day, but not statistically significant. We didn't add on weeks running out to get their ceftriaxone doses. And then there was a question earlier, someone was asking about dual therapy by facility type. So we did look at that in 2011. So of those who had recommended doses of ceftriaxone and cefixime, how many got either azithromycin or doxycycline as recommended by the CDC? And overall, what was reported amongst these study facilities was about 60% reported treating as well with azithromycin or doxycycline. And across the board, it was still pretty low, almost 80% in juvenile hall, family planning about half, and private providers about almost 60%. So the other question that came to mind is, well, are they referring out? Has there been a big shift in the diagnosing providers now sending their patients elsewhere for treatment because they can't or won't give IM treatment? And so the way we looked at this was the proportion of GC cases where the diagnosing facility was different from the treatment, the reported treatment facility. And overall, between the two time periods, we didn't see a significant change in treatment referrals. And then we specifically wanted to look at the private providers. Remember, we saw that decrease in recommended therapy overall, and we're wondering, are they sending them all out to get treated elsewhere? And so statistical difference in terms of referring out, but there was a slight increase. So just to summarize what we found, so there was no change in the overall proportion of GC treated with recommended treatment over time, specifically whether or not they changed their, they stopped treating with recommended therapy pre and post our very strong recommendations of IM therapy. There was a significant increase in proportion of GC that was treated with ceftriaxone IM, so 13% and 90%. And the median time to recommended treatment went from 5 days to 7 days. Where am I limited? Oh, okay. So in conclusion, a new GCIM treatment recommendation didn't appear to significantly prevent or delay treatment amongst folks that were using oral therapy before, and that infrequent injectors seem able to adopt the new treatment recommendation. However, amongst this private provider group, there was a decrease in the overall proportion that were treated with recommended therapy, but the time to treatment didn't change significantly. So, of course, there are lots of limitations to this evaluation. A couple things to think about, you know, so this is all based on provider report, the treatment information. One thing to think about, though, is we did look at everyone, of those that were not treated at all, there was 130 of them, 40% didn't have a treatment CMR submitted, and it was the same in the two time periods. So at least in terms of the change in reporting, I don't think that limitation was there. I think the validity of reported treatment on CMRs is a big issue, especially around the dual therapy one, and so I don't want people to think that no one is doing dual therapy, at least in these groups, because it doesn't make sense. It's very easy to give oral therapy, and these people were all giving oral therapy before, so why they didn't also give the oral therapy after they quickly picked up the IM recommendation. So I am concerned that there is a disconnect in terms of how they are reporting it to us. Perhaps their CMR doesn't have enough room for them to report it. Perhaps nurses that are transcribing what the doctor prescribed don't realize that this needs to go on the report. So anyway, I think there are a lot of issues around that. And of course, you know, this really has some limited generalizability. This was just a small fraction of LA County providers who happened to be treating with oral therapy beforehand. And remember, beforehand, they were equivalent, you know, oral and IM. So it's possible that this quick change you saw was they picked up these people maybe didn't even have big barriers. They just didn't know that they were supposed to choose one over the other. But implications is, I don't think health departments should be afraid of strongly recommending ceftriaxone. I think we really need to promote it in terms of treating GC. And private providers, HMO, community clinics, and basically the ones that we often have some trouble with, if they are diagnosing a lot of your GC and if they are treating with oral, they might have more barriers and need extra assistance to get them to shift over to IM treatment. And with that, the primary author of the study was Vin Goldstein, so I'm honored to give her talk for her, and thanks to my co-authors, Dr. Anilam and Dr. Kernt. And thank you very much.
Sarah. Thank you very much for that. That was a great talk. Did you guys have an opportunity to look at the proportion of people who were treated more than 7 days out rather than focusing just on the median?
Yeah, the mean was 10 to, and then 11, so no significant change there either.
Hi, Sarah. Bob Bowen. So can you tell us, or do you know, what percentage of facilities you actually had one of your public health investigators call them up after their first? No.
Yeah.
So what I was wondering is whether or not there was a learning effect there based upon urging. In other words, you know, the first time they treated the case, they didn't treat it properly, and then you called them up and said, hey.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is really kind of an ecological event in whether or not our public health response, meaning our PHI is actually following up on GC cases, whether or not that had a big impact. We threw seeds out and asked them to follow up, but we did zero monitoring of what their actual contact was and content. So maybe this was all based just on the CDC recommendation and, you know, the webinars that were given. I mean, who knows what got them to shift that quickly? And I was very impressed by the private provider HMO group, because that's a group we don't have a lot of active outreach to. But I would guess that our PHIs did a lot of work because they feel very compelled about this issue and have been reporting lots of follow-up. Yeah.
Bob?
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, is there any follow-up done when you get a report from a provider who's not using the recommended therapy? Do you follow up with those providers to figure out why they might not be doing it? And if so, is it just a matter they don't know the recommendations or anything like that?
Well, we've done nothing.
Thank you.
It's on our list. It's on our
list.
just doing this analysis brought up so many other questions and things we should be doing. But, you know, this is at least a start. At least we don't feel like we did horrible harm in going out there and really pushing the IM treatment. But there's many other things we should be looking at, especially when and if we decide it should only be IM therapy. Yes.
Hi, Anne Liflander, New York City. I was wondering, when you counted the number of patients who got dual therapy, did you only count dual therapy if they were both the ceftriaxone and the other therapy were given on the same day? Because we've had confusion among our providers if they treated a patient presumptively for chlamydia on the
right
day that on the day that the specimen was taken, did they need to retreat with azithromycin when they brought the patient back?
Yeah, and I know that's one of we collaborated with San Francisco in terms of putting together kind of FAQs, because those were big questions about if they had treated them a week before, do you need to retreat technically. In terms of this analysis, I am pretty sure Ben included treatment within a week, but I'm not I cannot say whether or not they needed to be treated the same day or not. I don't know.
Hi. I'm Robin Farrell, and I have a question. I work in a nonprofit organization. We want to follow the IM recommendations. However, with costs, providing it to our patients because we foot the bill. Any recommendations on how to do that, or to stick with an oral like the cefixime? Or the second part of the question is, with the dual therapy, did you see a lead? I guess leaning toward using the azithromycin versus the doxy because of cost effectiveness?
Let me answer the first, because that one's easier.
Okay.
So the first one was, did we see more azithro than doxy? And certainly, we see much more azithro than doxy being treated as kind of co-treatment for chlamydia as well as dual therapy. And I think was your first question was how to get to make it more fiscally feasible?
I think that's what I'm asking, because we've investigated different avenues,
right,
to be able to get the injectable, as far as like pharmacies that may be willing to give us a discounted cost for our purchase,
right,
since our clients really do not pay anything, versus also a community plea, I guess, to one of the local hospitals if they would provide some at a discount.
Yeah.
Versus using the oral.
And what you're highlighting kind of the real crux of this issue, right? And so this paper barely touches upon that because we still have those private providers you saw. There's a big chunk, say, that are still not treating with ceftriaxone, and that's probably the group in the family planning that you're talking about that have significant fiscal or other kind of administrative barriers. And I think that's really where we all need to be kind of digging in and where advocacy and understanding what the reimbursement issues and insurance issues are in each kind of jurisdiction as well as kind of bigger picture. So in California, it's for us, it's working with Family Pack and understanding pharmacy dispensing and double billing rules. I mean, it makes my head spin, so I am not going to be able to speak on a bigger perspective in terms of answers, but I think we need to put our heads together and recognize that this is important and we need to figure out how you can afford it because we need to treat them properly, give them the best care that they deserve. So.
And on a side note, I usually use Doxy as my dual therapy because my patients can get it for $5. Versus the 35 if I use oral azithromycin versus the 50 or 60 if I use the liquid, the solution.
Huh. Interesting.
So that's just an FYI.
Okay.
For anybody else.
All right, thank you
thank
very
you,
much.
Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, I didn't want to. One more.
One more, yeah, we got time.
This is more of a comment than a question. If there are cost barriers to doing it the right way,